Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Pacifica National Board's Audit Committee meeting. Tonight, we're having a special meeting where we will be interviewing our prospective auditors. Our first auditor is Mr. Tony Pohl from Helen Donovan, and tonight, Lisa Davis is serving as our note taker. Lisa, could you please call the roll? And I'm Nia Bediako, the chair.
Okay. Evelyn Bethune.
Present.
Tracy, and please forgive me all if I mispronounce your names. Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Jacqueline Aiken.
Present.
Joe Wanzala. Joe Wanzala.
He might be on mute.
Okay. Sean Casey O'Brien.
Present.
Nia Bediak, you are the chair, and Lisa Davis, I am present. Is there anybody's name that I did not call?
Okay. Tracy?
Yes.
You're first. Could you take the first... Sorry, I know I'm confusing you guys now. There aren't that many of us left on the call, I see. So you take the top eight.
The top eight questions. Okay. Well, we're going to have a long conversation. Hi, Mr. Pohl. I guess I will just start off with the first one. Forward. The later ones, perhaps a bit less so. So the first thing that the committee wanted to know is how many staff members will be assigned to our audit. So could you give us a little bit of information about that?
Yes, it would be at least two staff accountants, a senior in-charge accountant, a staff accountant, a manager, and myself. And I would be supported by a second partner to do an independent review and sort of act as a backup to me.
Okay. And could you estimate, and I, you know, obviously this is an estimate at this point, but in terms of your anticipation and your planning, about how many hours per level of staff would you expect to spend on this assignment? And I think a range is fine.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have, I'm in New York. I don't have that information with me. It's in my office in San Francisco. To the best of my recollection, I believe it was 120 senior hours and 100 or so staff accountant hours.
So 120 senior and 100 or so staff accountant is your estimate. And could you...
Correct.
Okay, and could you get back to us if on review it turns out you didn't entirely remember that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, third question was, what are the qualifications and expertise of the personnel to be assigned to the audit? And you
the important thing that you need to think about is not so much the staff as the partners and the managers. If you have my proposal in front of me, you'll see that I have over 30 years of professional practice. I was started my professional training development with Deloitte, Haskins and Sells, and then was recruited by KPMG substantially for the 30 odd years of practice. Actually, good Lord. It's 33 years of practice. I've been specialized in the not-for-profit community. Likewise, the second partner, Tom Wilkinson, who was also with KPMG, has over 10 or 15 years with KPMG, likewise in the not-for-profit area. Selena Lamb, the manager, has 10 years of professional experience exclusively. That's all as his profit audit not-for-profit organization.
Anyhow.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of staffing, that has yet to be determined because we never got to meet with the controller. We never got the opportunity to talk about timing as to when the engagement would be done. That said, we have an office. We have 100 professional staff. Audit something in the neighborhood of 250 or more not-for-profit organizations. So while I cannot say who the accountant is going to be on the job, I can guarantee you, without a doubt, that the person that you on your engagements will understand what temporary restricted net assets are, what permanently restricted net assets are, and what the implications are of auditing a not-for-profit organization.
Okay, thank you. The next question is if you could tell us a little bit how your structure works in terms of a nonprofit rate structure as opposed to either a standard or a commercial rate structure. Do you make any distinction in the fees?
We do, and we try to. Typically, we try to first, before I fully answer that, let me go back and we are a six. Actually, we've just opened another office in Boston because of client needs. We're a seven-office firm. We have 100 staff. We have 14, 15 partners. We have a very large SEC practice. The not-for-profit practice is a good practice because it ties in with our SEC practice. Our SEC practice keeps the staff almost fully utilized. I would say good 50, 60% of the staff fully utilized from February through July. We're able to offset the costs of providing services to the not-for-profit community. Typically, we'll discount our rates about 25%, provided that we can deliver those services outside of what is really our peak season, which is February through May.
Great, thank you. The next question, well, actually, these are kind of similar questions, but the first is, do you or any other partner in the firm have any relatives, friends, or peers at Pacifica, staff, volunteers?
No, we do not.
We should know about. Okay. And then the second question.
That I'm aware of. And while we haven't gone out and done our due diligence yet, because obviously we haven't been retained by you, I do San Francisco and L.A., which would be the impacted, actually in Houston, too, which would be the impacted. We don't have anybody working in for Pacifica Foundation or any of the radio stations.
Thank you. We just wanted to check on that. And are there any other conflicts of interest, in fact, or appearance that we should know about that you're aware of?
There are none that I'm aware of.
All right, next question. What would you say is the capability of the firm for making constructive observations and recommendations for improving internal accounting controls?
I think that actually that's probably our firm's primary strength. All of our partners, without exception, well, actually six partners of Big Eight, which kind of ages us because, you know, they're now down to the final four. We have two partners that are Big Six. We, all of us, grew up in an environment of client service. We recognize that there are a lot of very qualified CPAs of the U.S. I think the reason we've been so successful and continue to be successful is because we provide more than just an audit. You know, our staff understands that if they have to ask questions why, there's a very, very good probability there's a management-led point, something of that could be a benefit to our client down the road. And that's a discipline that we've grown into them from the very first day they joined us.
Okay, and this will be my last question, and then I'll pass you over to someone else. Let's see. How would you determine that our year-end accruals for pledges and receivables are fairly stated? In other words, it's sort of a technical question about what the double-check procedure is.
Well, the year-end for receivables, what we would do, we would look at two things. One, we'd look at the history of the aging. First, we would confirm any receivables that you may have, promises to give that you may have outstanding. Then we will look at the age of the receivable and then the history of that particular client or donor to see if they'd promised. And ultimately, we would look at your experience in the industry as to what sort of ratio of collections you have to promises that are actually made. Compare that on a national basis, and then in conjunction with management, make a judgment call as to what we believe is the appropriate amount. With respect to accruals on the liability side, we would really look, after the balance sheet date, as we get close to wrapping up the field work, we look at the disbursements that you've made from the end of the year through to the end of our field work, as well as correspond with attorneys and professional organizations and perform analytic procedures to look for unrecorded liabilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that completes my portion of the interview, so at this point I will pass you on to the next person.
Listen, you might lose me shortly. My battery is dying in my phone here, but I will try to get you on the speakerphone.
Okay, Sean. Thanks, Lisa, I know you're doing double duty, and you have. Could you take, please, the next floor?
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Tony, for joining us here on this evening, and I hope you enjoy your stay in New York while you're here.
I am loving it. I haven't seen my daughter since Christmas, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Oh, that's fantastic, and I'm glad the weather's pretty good for you.
It's wonderful.
Okay, question number 8. How would you determine that our year-end accruals for pledges and receivables are fairly stated? Did we just? We didn't just ask for that.
Okay,
yeah.
We just responded to that.
I'm sorry. That sounded familiar. I'm sorry. Apologies. Number 9. What do you know about the financial operation and challenges of public radio/broadcasting, and what is your experience with donor-based nonprofit organizations?
Well, actually, that's a very, very good question, and I think that's why we fit so nicely in love with the Pacifica Foundation. From a not-for-profit perspective, I spend substantially all of my time auditing not-for-profit organizations. My largest clients are in excess of $100 million in annual contributions, with assets in the range of $250 plus million. I have myself and Tom Wilkinson. We work with both domestic and international not-for-profit organizations throughout the world. So you'll see sometimes one of both of us may be in Asia, in Europe, in a different continent, working with subsidiaries of U.S. Not-for-profits, specifically with. With radio organizations, we work with the American Radio Empire and Matinee Media, so we understand what broadcasting is about. We understand the issues and the cost structure, the licensing issues, what should be recorded as a capital asset, what should not be. We understand the business. And again, because we have... And I have personally spent over 30 years auditing not-for-profits. I really know what your business is about.
Good to know. So the next question that I will ask is, what are your expectations regarding specific staff for the audit?
You didn't come through completely clearly, so let me rephrase that question. I understood you to say what would be the expectations of Pacifica Foundation staff in conjunction with the audit. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The way our approach is, I think, is fairly common. What we would do is I myself and the manager would come and meet with station management or the foundation management to get an understanding of your operation. We would look at last year's financial statements, last year's tax returns. We would put together a list of items that we expect to see, that we would expect to get. We call it our PBC list, prepared by client list. Most of it typically, and unfortunately I don't know, I was unable to contact your chief financial officer. He was on leave. Most of the time, the information that we need is contained in the general ledger. And so all we need is a copy of the general ledger, and an electronic copy that allows us to open it up and drill down to whatever level. If that's not the case, we typically will give the client what we call this PBC list, which give us your board minutes through the most recent date. Give us the list of donors in excess of $5,000 so that we can, and please prepare these confirmations. Give us a general ledger. Give us a listing of your accounts receivable, promises to give as of September the 30th. And give us a listing of your liabilities. And I said, typically, a lot of this information is already contained in the general ledger and is available to us upon demand. So it's kind of almost a checklist to make sure all of that information is there. And then we would, the manager and a staff accountant would come in. They'd probably spend a couple of days in the office doing what we call our risk assessment, our risk planning. We would leave for a week or two. It's something we'd work out with the foundation management. And then we would leave them with a list of items to select, cancel checks, invoices, essentially support that we would need to support our opinion on the fairness of your financial statements.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Tony, could you repeat the last statement that you just said?
What I just said was...
I'm sorry, Tony. Mr. Poe, 1 second, please. Is it pound one, Jack, that's mute on this one? Pound one?
I think so.
If could you kindly mute? There's a lot of static. Thank you. I apologize. Go ahead, Mr. Poe.
The question was...
Oh, I'm sorry. You were concluding your answer, and there was the last sentence statement that you made that didn't come in very clearly. If you could repeat that.
I mean, I'll just sort of rephrase what I said. Most of the information is going to be available to us once we get the general ledger. There may be a list of items that we actually need management to get or management to provide. We would give you a reasonable period of time. You know, we sort of work out a schedule with management, and we say these are the items that we need. When can you have them? And we'd work out a schedule where we can return to conclude our order.
Okay. Now, for the next question, hold on 1 second, please. In your prior experience with performing audits for nonprofit organizations, have you encountered any situations where your examination revealed a need to extend your test work beyond the normal level? And if so, what is your policy in such situations?
Yeah, this actually happened to me 2 years ago. I had a situation in Los Angeles where we strongly suspected management fraud, and what I did, the information was given to me. I met with the chief financial officer and the executive director. I did not feel that I got good explanations for certain transactions and events. I then called the audit committee and explained my concerns, and a more detailed investigation was launched that concluded in us restating our opinion. Actually, we had not issued our opinion, but in making adjustments to the financial statements, and certain amounts being assessed against as ordinary income against some of the senior management of the organization.
It seemed like a part of the answer got cut off. Did other people experience that as well? When
This was information. I'm sorry. Was that question for me, or was that question for the other audit committee?
That's right. I was asking everybody in general because it seemed like you were saying, and then a little bit of it got cut off, at least from what I was hearing.
Yeah. Well, I apologize. I'm on a cell phone, so I'm not on a landline, so the reception can be bad. But just in case everybody did not hear it, I'll repeat it. And ultimately, we felt was an issue. It was reported to me. I interviewed management. I was not satisfied with the responses. We did a little more digging. I then felt my responsibility to bring it to the attention of the audit committee. And the ultimate result after a detailed investigation was that certain amounts were the compensation of certain individuals within the organization was increased for amounts that they had themselves. In our engagement letter, we state very clearly, we have a paragraph, if you become aware of fraud, if you believe that there is a potential for fraud, whether it's fraud abstraction of assets or fraud in the delivery, in the presentation of the financial statements in excess of $2,500, we expect that you will notify us and then we will do an investigation. The need for transparency, not only in not-for-profit, not only in publicly traded companies, but also not-for-profit organizations has increased tremendously over the last few years. And we don't feel that we could discharge our responsibility to the board and to the audit committee unless we're getting cooperation from the audit committee and the organization at that time when they suspect that something's occurring. Because remember, as board members, even though you're a public charity, your shareholders are the public in general. And you have a responsibility to them and to the Attorney General to make sure that the assets that you're charged with are properly controlled.
Okay, Lisa. Yes, thank you. There's a lot of work to do. Thank you there, Tony. Now, Jack Van Aken?
Yes.
I think we lost some folks along the way there. Could you do the next four, including the next four, please?
Okay, sure. I think number 12 actually is a follow-up to 11, which has already been answered, but just for fairness and completeness, I'll ask it anyway. Hi, Tony. Welcome. Can you tell us of one or more situations in your previous work where these issues arose and how your firm handled it? As I said, I think you already have given us...
Yes, Jack, I just did.
Yeah,
I will give you another example, actually, also, that happened to me about 3 years ago in San Francisco. It was for a fairly large for-profit organization. At the end of the audit, and it was a difficult audit, there was a company that was hoping to go public. At the end of the audit, management refused to sign the representation letter. And this is a representation letter that's signed at the end of the audit, is given to the auditors. We have disclosed, we have given you everything. We have disclosed everything to you. Have not held anything back from you. They refused to sign that. We refused to issue our opinion.
Okay.
Because we did not, when I got down to it and I went and met with a second partner, we discussed it and we said, why would they not want to sign this letter? This is a boilerplate letter, and the only reason they would not want to sign it is because they were holding something back, and consequently we refused and withdrew from the engagement.
Okay. Thank you. it might be helpful for us to get a sense of your experience in our sector and industry, and beyond what you've mentioned already with certain radio entities. Is a full client list for the past 3 years available to us beyond?
I believe you'll find it in the engagement in the order proposal.
Ah. Next question is, Pacifica's board of directors is community elected, meaning that it is not as full of lawyers and accountants as some nonprofit boards. Would you say that it is a strength of your firm to explain financial data to non-financial professionals?
Yes, it is. Thank you, because you've hit a very, very strong point that I feel very strongly about. Having been and sat on several boards and having been in the not-for-profit community, whenever possible, I love to attend board meetings face-to-face and sit down with board members and look into their eyes and see if they're following what I'm explaining. And if not, explain. As you can see from my resume, I taught in graduate school at Golden Gate for 8 or 9 years. To me, it's very important. And I really try to get focused on several things. One, make sure that the interim financial statements that the organization produces are similar in some ways to what the final financial statements are, or what your financial statements are, so that when the board of directors sees it, they're not seeing one thing once a year. They're seeing it either quarterly or monthly or bi-monthly, and so there's a level of familiarity so they understand. This is something I really feel very strongly about because, as I said, you know, as a board member, you've got a fiduciary responsibility to the Attorney General and your community to take charge of the assets. You can't do that if you're looking at a financial statement once a year and you don't understand what's going on. It's my job not only to be the auditor, but to communicate, because after all, that's what I'm doing. I'm communicating to you the results of my work and the work that my staff does. So I can only be effective if you understand. One of the things I do is in my report, as an adjunct to my report, I give you a written report saying, okay, guys, here's the major changes that happened within your organization. And also, these are changes in the accounting rules, and these are changes in the audit rules. So, yeah, actually, Jack, as you can tell, I'm sorry if I got a little excited, but this is I feel very strongly about.
Okay, good. And this is a follow-up to that question. What do you think is most important in helping a board of directors understand the results of a completed audit? You may have already stated that.
I think I have. It's understanding. You don't have to be technical. There certainly is a requirement now within the new order standards that the organization, somewhere in the organization, whether at management level or at the board level or even at the community level, understand what the financial statements represent. Because there's this new thing called ICFA, Internal Control Over Financial Reporting. In the past, accountants, even for SEC organizations, we put together the financial. We did the audit, and we put together the financial. And first, the SEC came out and said, hang on, you can't be part of the internal control process in developing the financial statements because you're auditing them. And now the not-for-profit community is developing to the same thing. So it is important that the organization, someone within the organization, understand fully the organization's financial statements. We can certainly help translate them, editorialize on them, comment, report their accuracy. But it is equally important for the organization to monitor that. And as part of my job is, I see part of my job is making sure that I've educated the board to the best I can to help them in that process.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. We have some more.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. Okay. Sean Casey.
Thank you. Tony, welcome aboard. And I'd like to know, you just talked about the 250 nonprofits you've worked with at a reduced rate. I'd like to refine that question just a little more and ask, how much pro bono work does your firm do?
We do some, very little. To be honest with you, we're a business. And, you know, I have responsibilities to my wife, my children, my family. We do what we can. We have our own charities that we contribute to. I know I've suddenly given to Mary Berg over the years, because Mary and I spend every Sunday together in the office. But ultimately we're a business.
Right, okay, and at least you got your priorities straight with your wife and children there. And how much pro bono work, if any, are you offering Pacifica?
I don't have that number in front of me. As I recall, I think we're in the ballpark of about 75% of our standard fees.
Okay, and who are your corporate clients? And I'll put these two questions together. Is there anybody we should be concerned about? You're not working for Blackwater or anything like that, are you?
No. You know, the nice thing is our firm is, even though we are in Texas and Washington and now in Massachusetts, we are a San Francisco firm. And there are certain implications for that, and that is that. Put it this way, I have a magnet on my refrigerator that says "Impeach the Bastards."
Very good.
Okay, so need I
enough said? I guess, huh?
And we don't have any clients in the military. In the military environment, we work with biogenetic. We work with software companies, with manufacturing companies. We're a West Coast Berkeley group. Give us went to school at Cal, and we reflect Cal's values.
Thank you. Next.
Oh, you did. Okay. I'm the last of the Mohicans, Mr. Paul. Mike, what paperless audit system do you use or will you use?
We use a system called EngageFX.
I'm sorry, Mr. Paul, you phased out. I didn't hear what you said.
I'm sorry. It's put out by Commerce Clearinghouse, CCH. It's called Engagement FX or Engagement Office. It's a particular software that embeds Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, and the database software that I forget. I can't think of it right now, but that with together with scanning with scanning documents, we produce very little paper. We made a concerted effort on this several years ago, and it's now paying off in spades. Just because, given the high cost of rent in San Francisco, we've been able to cut our file room down.
Okay. Are you done?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. I think that's an hour. How long after the audit report?
Nia, I'm sorry.
I'll pick up my handset. Assuming that our books are closed after the engagement, how long after will you be able to issue the audit report?
The way we work is when we assign staff to the engagement. Many clients, many CPAs like to take their accountants out of the field as soon as they've done all the minimum testing and sort of wrap up in the office. In fact, I had a discussion at this at the partner manager meeting yesterday in San Francisco. My preference is just the opposite. I like to leave my staff out in the field to wrap up. So when they leave the client's office, they're done. We've got a report draft, so it's really the manager's been out, review the work on site. Literally, it can be within, I'm trying to think, over the last few weeks, we've issued a couple of different reports. One was a very troublesome report. I think the staff finished about midnight on a Saturday night, and I met with the audit committee by telephone, because it was a national organization, the following Wednesday. So within 4 days.
Okay, and my final question is, can you speak to S 112 and its implementation?
Can I'm very familiar with FAST 112. We've already started implementing the new risk assessment suite a year ago. We did not wait until this year because, again, we feel we're a very progressive firm, and I never want to be behind. I never want to be behind the eight ball. So we actually started implementing the new standards last year.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I have no further questions for you. Does anyone have any other questions? Or did anyone come on the call?
Yes, this is Donna Warren. I came on the call about 6 minutes after six. And Mr. Cole, I just want to say hi. And thank you for applying and joining the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Did you have one quick question, Donna?
I've been listening to the answers, and I'm very impressed.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Paul, well, thank you very much, and you enjoy your stay in New York, and I will be in contact with you as soon as possible. Of course, the committee has to meet, and we have to decide who will choose. So I will be in touch with you, okay?
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much. And have a great stay. Okay.
Good
bye-bye.
Evening. Bye-bye.
Good evening.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Could someone please mute? I'm going to call Estes right now. I'll be right back.
Okay. Hi, everyone. This is Tracy. I just let you know that I'm going to pop off in about 15 minutes. I'll try to listen to as much of that interview as I can, but it won't be the whole thing. I won't be asking questions this time around.
Hello. Everybody else is here, right? I know that Leah, I think, just went off. But I'm on a train. I'm on the blue line. I don't have my questions. So I cannot ask any questions. I was originally supposed to come on at 6:30. Did you hear me? Hello? Anybody still on the call?
Yes. I heard you, Donna. It's Jack.
Oh, okay.
Anybody else here?
Yeah.
Don's here.
I don't know, but thanks for the phone call, but I was supposed to come on at 6:30.
Oh.
And I've been running around meeting, so I'm on my way to another meeting right now, but I'm on the train.
Meetings.
Hey, it's busy sometimes.
Well, Mr. Paul did sound impressive.
Yeah, he did.
Big difference in what they're charging.
What do you mean?
Well, the other bid was for something like $80,000.
Oh.
$40,000.
Yeah. Well, to tell the truth, I'm looking at proposals, a couple of things. What we are requiring may take more than the $40,000, but not only that, I'm a little skeptical because Ross Wisdom did charge $80 per year, and I'm sorry.
Donna?
Yeah. Oh,
Donna? No, one second. We're on a live stream,
and the figure was 66. I think I forwarded that email. Mr. Nino?
Oh,
one second. Mr. Nino, did you just join us?
No, this is Sean.
Okay.
Joe Bryan, I came back online on my speakerphone.
Okay. He should be coming on.
Okay, well, I won't discuss anything, but are we back on stream now?
Yes, you are. You were always on stream.
Okay.
Mr. Nino? Okay, I guess he's getting himself together.
And Nia, I'm on a train right now. I don't have any questions with me.
Your three questions were asked.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think originally I was supposed to come on at 6:30, but anyhow, it doesn't matter. I will be here to listen.
Okay. Not a problem. Mr. Nino? Oh, boy. I'm going to call him back to make sure.
Nia, this is where Tracy is off the call now. I don't know if you got that or not.
Okay. Thanks, please.
How do you mute? Because this train is very loud.
I think it's pound one.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Pound one.
Pound one?
Two
pounds.
Double pound one. Not pound one.
Do it really quickly, Donna.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
You have to do it quickly. Pound, pound one.
Pound, pound one, okay.
Yeah. Pound one, is that working? Are you doing it quickly, Donna?
She must be muted.
No, I can still hear her train. I'm going to call them again. Did someone just join? Hello? Hello? Lisa, while I'm trying to reach them, can you just pick? Okay, we know Donna can't ask because she's on the train. Evelyn can't. So who's left?
Jack is here.
Sean's here on speakerphone. Can everybody hear me all right?
Tracy is off the call. Sean, myself. Sean, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now, who's that that said I'm here?
Nia, I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Madam Chair, do you want me to do a quick roll call again?
Yeah, I just talked to them, but now nobody's picking up the phone. Okay. Donna,
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Try the town one again, please.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I think you have to do it really quickly.
Okay.
Compound one.
One.
Compound one. Wonder what happened to them. Did someone just join?
That was the leaving sound.
That was the leaving sound.
That was the hang-up sound.
When you hear two beeps, Jack, that's the leaving sound?
When it's descending tone.
Beep,
boop. That's leaving.
Madam Chair, this is Sean. Can you hear me?
Yes, Sean.
Yeah, are we having trouble locating or connecting with the second applicant?
Yeah, I just talked with him and I gave him the number. I'm calling them again.
Okay.
That's odd. Someone just joined?
That's Donna again. Trying to get back on.
Hi, this is Nia Bedialko, and I just called. We're waiting for you. Okay. It's 0292553 pounds. Now, and it's 877-746-4263. Okay. Okay. I'm patient. Not a problem. Okay. Okay, not a problem.
Jane is clear. The doors are closing.
Manténgase alejado. Las puertas están cerradas.
No, that's one of our members that's on a train is trying to mute. And Jack?
Did you call me?
Yeah, I wanted you to test the pound one, make sure it was pound, but I think...
All right.
Hello?
Maybe it's Don.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Oh, hello. Okay, and who's that?
This is Donald Nino from Vasquez & Company.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Nino. I'm going to hang up from your colleague.
Okay, and I will go and collect Mr. Vasquez, and we'll be ready to begin.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, did you want me to do a roll call again?
No, I think Tracy's gone, right? Who's that?
Tracy left.
So it's Jack, you, me, that's on email. That's it, right?
No, Sean.
I think Donna's here.
Yeah, but she doesn't have the question.
Yes, she doesn't have the question. That's right.
Sean, do I hear you?
That's what I'm asking. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
So you'll keep your questions, correct?
Thank you for
Yes, I'm here. I had to unmute Donna, but I'm going to mute again.
Okay, thanks, Donna. Okay, we'll just make the jump. Now, you take the first. We're slowly but surely dwindling here. You take the first. I don't want to. I tell you, Lisa, you take the first nine, Lisa.
The first nine,
yeah. And then Jack. It's just the three of us.
Okay.
just the roots on the phone.
I'm assuming that this person is on California time.
Yeah.
We're in California time.
Oh. Is everyone there now?
Yes, we're all here.
We're ready to go.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. Our note taker for tonight is Lisa Davis, and she'll call our names just so you hear who you're talking with. And we're a mixture of national board directors and local station board members. All national board directors are local station board members, but all local station board members aren't national directors. So that's our mix right there.
Wonderful.
So Lisa?
And we're from across the country. Again, I'm going to start with my usual. If I mispronounce anybody's name, please forgive me. Evelyn Bethune. Okay. Tracy Rosenberg. Jack Van Aken.
Present.
Joe Anzala. Okay. Sean Casey O'Brien.
Present.
Great. Nia Bediako, the chair.
Present.
Donna Jo Warren.
On the train. President on the train.
And Lisa Davis, who is present.
Okay. So, Lisa, we'll start with you. Mr. Nino?
Yes?
Would you like to go around and introduce your crew?
Yes. We have Mr. Gilbert Vasquez, managing partner, and Mr. Lee Waddle, quality control partner, Ms. Arlene Montemayor, senior manager, and Ms. Maria Benel Celibon, engagement principal.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to start with Lisa Davis to ask the question.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you all for joining us and being on this call, participating. The first question that I have is, how many staff members will be assigned to the audit for Pacifica?
Probably four in total.
Okay.
That's not including the partners.
Yeah, not including the partners to the engagement.
That's the staff in the field?
That's the field.
Okay.
And their level of expertise, Lise.
Right. My next question is, as I just said, Nia?
Yes. Their level of expertise. Donna, you need to do pound pound one again.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
And what is the level of expertise of the staff that would be handling the audit?
All of our, in our firm, most of our staff are seniors. We have about 40 professional staff in the firm. About 30 of those are seniors. And that'll be probably the level we'll be going with on this engagement, since it's an out-of-town engagement. It's jobs like this, we want to make sure that all our people are experienced. Now, we do about probably more than 200 nonprofit and governmental audits, so we have a lot of experience doing nonprofits, and the staff that we have, the seniors that we'll be using in this engagement, all have extensive experience doing nonprofit audits.
And I think in total experience, most of our seniors have 5 or more years experience.
At a minimum.
Okay. The next question that I have following up on what you just said is, how many hours per level of staff will be spent on this assignment?
We're estimating that the engagement is going to take about 600 hours, and we're guessing that the that the senior and level will take about 400 and about 30 hours or so.
And the difference is principals and partners and managers.
Okay. I asked you already about the qualifications and expertise of the personnel to be assigned to the audit, but of course, if you would like to speak on that more, please feel free.
Just on that side of it, just to give you a kind of a feel for our firm, both Lee and I have been partners in the firm. The firm has more than 40 years of experience. Lee and I have been partners for over 25 years, and Bunnell has been a partner for about 7 years, and Arlene has been with the firm almost 7 years as well, and she is a senior manager. And prior to working with our firm, she was with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We also would like to point out that in the 40 years of business, we have never been sued. We've never had any complaints filed against us before the State Board of Accountancy. We've never settled any potential lawsuits, and we've never been asked to resign from any engagement. We estimate that during our business career, we have done more than 6,000 audits. In addition to that, I have served as president of the California Board of Accountancy, which license regulates all the CPAs in California. That kind of, I think, touches on our integrity and our skill level. We also have Oscar Chacon, who is not listed in the team of people we are using, and he is our IT expert. He was with KPMG for about 8 years before joining our firm. In that same capacity.
Well, that sounds very, very impressive. My next question that I have for you is, what is your nonprofit rate structure versus your standard fees, your standard rates?
I didn't bring that sheet with me, but basically it's about 75% of our private sector client rate. We are, for your information, we're also PCAOB approved. PCAOB is the
public companies, the county oversight boards.
And they have a component that oversees the audit firms. There's about 44,000 firms in the United States. About 200 or so do audit of five or more publicly traded companies. And we are in that 200. That requires us to have a second level of review, and that also kind of speaks to the level of skill that we have in performing, especially those types of audits, which are a little more, they're obviously different from the nonprofit side, but it just kind of speaks to the skill level that we have. If that answers your question.
Okay, yes, it does answer it somewhat. And I have to just apologize to people if it seems like I'm stumbling with some of these questions. It's that the print came out very small on my computer, and I'm getting older. My eyes are not what they used to be. Okay.
I wear glasses. If that makes me feel any better.
And I'm hard of hearing.
Just for the purposes of the stream, I'm not that old. Okay. Okay, so the next question that I have for you, do any of you or does anybody in your firm that you know of have any relatives or friends or peers at Pacifica, either staff, volunteers, local station board, or the national board and or affiliate stations?
To the best of our knowledge, the answer is no. And therefore, we are completely independent as it relates to performing this engagement.
Okay. Well, this is a follow-up sort of to the question I just asked. Are you all aware of any conflicts of interest in fact or appearance that we should know about?
Well, certainly not on our side. Beyond that, so the answer is absolutely no.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, my next question for you is, or our next question, I should say, for you is, what is your capability for making constructive observations and recommendations for improving internal accounting controls?
When we start with the, I'll answer it first. I'm going to have Lee and maybe Benel chime in. This is Gil Vasquez. One of the cornerstones of setting the parameters for the audit is to make an assessment of internal controls, since this is a risk-based auditing process that we use. And so we need to have a thorough understanding of your internal controls. And as we're looking at them, obviously, if there is any deficiencies, first of all, that's going to determine the level of audit that we have to do, the complexity and the extent. But as importantly, we would be identifying issues that we think we need to bring to your attention. And so that would be a way of certainly getting a good handle on what your how your internal controls work. That's at least my answer, Lee.
You know, I think our staff is trained, and we always keep in mind that if we have any ideas, if you will, to make things more efficient or better controls, sometimes they're important, sometimes they're not. Some of our clients will accept them, most of them do, and some of them say, no, we're not going to do that. But we're on record of having said it. And it basically, there's a letter issued at the end of the audit. Although we may discuss these things orally and go through meetings and whatnot that are going to relate to that year-end or the final audit report that comes out with a letter to management or a communication to, I think the term is those responsible for resources or whatever the title might be.
Governance,
there you go. See, the non-auditor knows more than I do.
Yeah, it's charged with governance.
It's mandatory that we have to communicate to those charged with governance, and that's typically the board or the audit committee or whatever.